Welcome back to the IFR. We are now virtually engaging, and bigger and better, we have face cams. My guest this week is Mr. Paul Jennings. Welcome, Mr. J.
Thank you very much, JK. It's a pleasure to be back on.
How are you doing, sir?
Yeah, not too bad, JK. Not too bad at all. I was looking forward to coming out of isolation on Monday, but it doesn't look like there's going to be much of that happening in terms of going out anywhere at all. So apart from that, I'm fine. How are you?
I'm great. You know, e-lessons, let us know how they're going for you guys. Also, let us know what you're doing to keep yourself busy. You know, put the hashtag IFR if you like the show. You know, follow me on Jukebox. Get, you know, watch the show. Comment down below. We'll have loads of links in the description. And this will be amazing. So,
great stuff.
Let's start, you know, back when this season started in August. What we'll do, guys, for your information, just the format is we're going to go through teams at the start of August, you know, contenders, top six, for the league title, bottom six, you know, for the Premier League, move on to other of the top five leagues around Europe. We'll move on to those. And then we'll look at the table just before January and then now to see if the January signings, if your club or our club have made any, and that will sort of see their impact and how the club has progressed. Have they progressed according to expectations at the start of the season, or have they, you know, surprised a few people? So let's, you know, rewind. If we could have a flashback sound, please, all the way back to August. Now, Mr. Jennings, what were you thinking in August, apart from, you know, in your holidays, I'm sure, being on the beach, enjoying a nice cocktail?
JK, this is a really good question, and actually something that I could answer for you. Unfortunately, I do not have the information to hand. So pre-season, myself and Mr. Atherton sat down and did our predictions for the Premier League, and I can tell you a couple of things off the top of my head that I'm confident of, but that information will have to be saved, I think, for a later show when I can get this from Mr. Atherton. Yeah. Okay, but my big prediction at the end of last season was that Liverpool would win it this year. I thought the sale of not so much the sale, but the departure of Vincent Kompany was a huge loss to City in more ways than one. I thought that in central midfield in general, with the exception of Kevin De Bruyne, Fernandinho is one hell of a player, but I think we've seen this year that he's not quite performing to the level he was a year, 2 years ago. He's been played central defensively as well as in midfield. And Rodri, for all of his plus points, I don't think he's had a bad debut season, but I don't think he's set the Premier League alight. So when we look at the scope of City's side, which I think is probably getting to that point now where it needs a complete revamp, Aguero is still by far for me the best striker in the league, but he's certainly over the horizon now, I think, in terms of improving as a player. So for me, Liverpool were always going to win it this year. I thought they were the best team in Europe last year. I think they're the best team domestically this year. We just got to hope now, I suppose, from the football fan within me, hopes that they do now in some way, shape or form get to finish that league and get their first trophy, Premier League trophy, in 30 years. So that's what I can tell you. In terms of the other end of the table, predictions-wise, I'm fairly sure I said that Norwich would go down. And beyond that, just thinking about our own side here of Manchester United, I have a feeling I've got Man United down as finishing third, which perhaps is a little bit a little bit misguided in reflection. Yeah. But they're the key points that I can remember. What about you?
For me, in the summer, I went to I went stateside, so that was an exciting experience for me. Did a few courses, etc. And, I used to wake up every early morning, you know, for the preseason games. I watched United against Leeds, I watched Inter Milan, Spurs. You know, we only conceded one goal in about five or six games. I was really impressed. You know, we were looking great on the counter-attack. Mason Greenwood was banging in goals. You know, obviously, we'll get onto that a bit later in the show, but I was really excited. I was really happy that, you know, we had a great preseason. You know, the usual rolling substitutes, you know, changing the whole 11 almost after the second half, but I really enjoyed sort of watching our side. But I think that I had a tingling fear in the back of my head that, you know, has Ollie overworked them, you know, compared to, you know, how static we were as a team under Jose Mourinho or certain things like that. And, you know, that was my only fear. But I got caught up in the moment. You know, as fans, we're emotional, emotional people. So I got caught up and I thought we were going to do really well this season. I was expecting at least top four, you know, maybe to challenge for in the Europa League, et cetera, et cetera. When it comes with regards to the whole Premier League table, I would agree with you. I would say that Liverpool, for me, I expected them to be the best team in the league because, you know, Van Dijk, Alisson, you know, I'm not sure about the second centre-back, but, you know, Robertson and Alexander-Arnold are the only two full-backs I fear in the Premier League, you know, attack offensively. But, you know, their midfield, they got a plethora of options. Front three, you know, probably one of the best front threes in the world. So I thought they had a really good chance. I mean, when it came to City, I would agree with you that Vincent Kompany, people underestimated how big a loss he is. Because when I look at the City team, apart from Fernandinho and, you know, De Bruyne, to a certain extent, and, you know, surprisingly, even Benjamin Mendy, I don't really see many characters in the dressing room, so to speak. I think they're all very, very good footballers, but I don't see characters in the sense that Kompany was a leader. I'd say De Bruyne leads by example. I would say Fernandinho leads by example. I would say that Benjamin Mendy, even though he hasn't been on the pitch, I think he leads in a way that, you know, he leads the morale. He tries to keep morale up. In a certain sense, you know, I'm not sure if you follow him on social media, but he's a very entertaining guy. So I think that, you know, he's a guy who can keep morale up, as I mentioned. And obviously they have Pep. You know, Pep is one of the best managers ever. And, you know, I expected him to come second best to this Liverpool side just because Liverpool, if you compared, you know, in each area, I would say that Liverpool are better. But I would say City's squad became a little thin. Everybody would say that Sané and Mendy are not compatible together because Mendy likes to overlap, but, you know, Mendy's injury woes sort of solved that issue in that sort of small little case. But not having, you know, width sometimes, because let's be honest, I think that, you know, with Guardiola and Klopp, fullbacks are important. If you target them one-on-one, you know, apart from Wan-Bissaka, I think he's the best one-on-one defender in the world in terms of right-back. You know, for me, the other being Ricardo Pereira, who's highly underrated. I don't see any other good one-on-one defenders. Violin Mendy, for me, has been a revelation of late because, you know, Marcelo, we knew needed to be phased out because, you know, Marcelo was Roberto Carlos' direct replacement and Roberto Carlos, for me, got phased out in 2006. So that's, you know, 13, 14 years of amazing service from Marcelo. And, you know, the time had come to replace him. Ferland Mendy done an excellent job. I think Rafa Varane and Sergio Ramos have actually been doing amazingly this season. That's hence why Real Madrid have the best defense in La Liga. You know, when would we ever say that, Mr. J? You know, when Ronaldo was in the side, you know, they had one of the best attackers in the world. You know, possibly the worst defense, and now they have the best defense. So it shows you that, you know, their strength essentially post Ronaldo has been flipped around with their, you know, their weakness, which is ironic. But I think that Real Madrid have a lot of young players, and if I was a young player, and, you know, apart from fullback and wide areas, and maybe midfield, I would look, and, you know, Real Madrid wanted me as opposed to Barcelona. I would go to Real Madrid because Real Madrid now actually giving youngsters a chance. if you look at, you know, the amounts of Fede Valverde in midfield, you know, essentially he's good at everything. You know, he can tackle, he does a bit of everything. Tackle, pass, he can dribble, he can, shoot a little bit. So that gave Zidane, for me, a natural Modric replacement, because Modric is now, I'd say, 35. And, you know, he can't do all the running anymore.
Ballon d'Or winner.
Ballon d'Or winner for, you know, one good tournament and a decent year. You know, Casemiro, what a signing that was from Sao Paulo and going to on loan to Porto. You know, for me, he has been consistently one of the top three defensive midfielders in the world for the last 5 years.
Easily. I agree with that. Yeah.
He's a glue for that Real Madrid team.
I saw an account on Twitter, which I'll find out the name of and mention it on the next show, of someone who puts together statistics, essentially inside of a graph, just a 2D graph, and plots points based on various two different axes of games to whatever the other measurement is. And did it with multiple different situations and comparisons. And Casemiro stands out exactly as you've just said as one of the most impressive central midfielders in Europe. He's right up there in most categories as being, in terms of his pass completion, in terms of his retention rate, in terms of his initiation of attack movements. He's just a very, very good player, and somebody Jose wanted to sign for United as well.
Really?
Yeah.
I've been mightily happy, because I think he's 27, 28, maybe 30, going on 30, but for me, he is, again, I said top three, could also be top, could also be second. And, you know, he's a glue in that Madrid side, because Toni Kroos has had a new lease of life under, Zidane Mark II. So I would say that Real Madrid, for me, they've always had good options in midfield. Modric, Kroos, Casemiro, Valverde, Dani Ceballos to come back. What's his future going to look like? I'd say wide areas, they're stocked in terms of having Hazard, Rodrigo, who looked very impressive against Shakhtar Donetsk, scoring a hat-trick. Becoming one of the youngest players in the Champions League to score a hat-trick. Vinicius, for me, who scored in El Clasico, as Madrid won 2-0 against Barcelona, who we'll get on to in a minute. So Vinicius, you obviously have the elephant in the room, Mr. Wales golf Madrid in that order, Gareth Bale. You have Takefusa Kubo. You have Kubo, the young Japanese international on loan at Mallorca, who ironically was in the Barcelona academy before Barcelona got a transfer ban for signing underage youngsters. I think he was, maybe 14 at the time. Now come to Madrid, he looks like a very exciting player. Jovic, people thought he's the long-term Benzema replacement. Now just looks like, maybe he hasn't settled in. Maybe the move was too soon for him. Again, Karim Benzema, we talked about him before Ronaldo left as, a player who doesn't score many goals. But this, the last couple of seasons, he's been their only goal scorer. And, Madrid, for me, it's their evolution from, Ronaldo to best defense in La Liga has been quite astonishing, because, you never thought that.
No, it's a great transformation. Karim Benzema is the player that I always felt Arsenal would have been pleased to have signed. His whole package, the whole approach play he has, the way that he drifts out into the wide areas, the way that he creates space, the way that he pulls people around. He's got that Arsenal. I mean, Benzema could have played for Barcelona. he's got that about him. He's a really good player. And obviously, as a United fan, we remember the Lyon game in the Champions League where Sir Alex went over to him after the game and gave him the shirt and said, you know, we'll be back for you in the summer. And then he went off to Madrid. So he's a very, very good player, Benzema. And actually, if you look at the longevity of his career there, he never gets spoken about in the same bracket as Raul or Ronaldo. But actually, he's been there for a long time now. He's scored a lot of goals. He's got a lot of assists to his name. A Madrid legend?
I would say so, because, you know, staying 9 years for me at the most volatile, maybe second most volatile after Barcelona, second most volatile club in the world. You know, it's a hard job, and to stay there, you know, number nine, you know, Gonzalo Higuain, let's not forget, is a great player, but even he can dislodge Benzema. So that's, you know, great. A lot of credit to Benzema. Again, going back to, you know, looking at next season, I would say that, you know, Achraf Hakimi's coming back off a great 2 year loan at Dortmund. I would say that,
I can't believe he's a Madrid player. That is some player they're getting back at the end of this season.
I know.
It's unbelievable. Oh, wow.
You know, Carvajal for me is days are numbered, because, you know, imagine that Madrid side, you know, with Achraf Hakimi's creativity. I don't think, if you play Ramos as a right-sided centre-back, Varane as a left-sided centre-back, Ramos, because Ramos has played a right-back before, Ramos knows what it's like in a way, and now playing a centre back, he knows what it's like to cover. So I would play Hakimi on that right hand side, and I'd tell him to, you know, go up and down. But what ironically I would say is, for me, the player that Hakimi is most like is Trent Alexander-Arnold. And would you agree?
I would agree.
Hakimi's slightly, you know, a micro Tesla better defensively.
He's less assists though, isn't he, Hakimi? He's more goals.
Yeah.
He's an absolute goal machine. I remember talking to you about this a few weeks ago, and we spoke about Hakimi. I obviously totally missed this. I was unaware that he was a Madrid player on a 2 year loan deal. I honestly thought he was just another young talent that Dortmund had managed to gather up. So I cannot believe it. So he's going to go back to Madrid. That's astonishing. Well, one point about Ramos at right back though is, I don't know whether I agree with you there, JK. He is not the sort of player, Ramos, that you want to leave 1v1. Because he's a red card all day long, isn't he, in the modern day? And I think that's why he was...
Yeah.
Say again.
26 red cards in his career.
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons he was moved. Obviously, Cannavaro left and a couple of other reasons. But one of the reasons Ramos was pulled inside, I think, was so that he could have a little bit more protection in terms of the holding midfielder. Because he's a great leader and he's a great header of the ball. He's very composed. He's one of the best defenders in world football, isn't he? Look at what he's won internationally, domestically. But he is a loose cannon. And if you're running at him...
He's a walking red card.
Yeah, he is a walking red card. Yeah, absolutely. Champions League. Yeah. Remember that? Oh, he's a nasty Ajax, piece of work.
Ajax yellow card, you know.
Let's
move on to their, you know, El Clasico rivals, Barcelona.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought that, you know, going into August as well, you know, they signed Frankie de Jong in January. I would say that, you know, last January, you know, I'd say I didn't really rate him at the time, but looking back at that, I think I was a bit foolish. You know, we all thought that, you know, Barcelona was going to come back. You know, we didn't see Griezmann coming after El Decision the summer before, but I would say it's a really bad campaign for Barcelona because, you know, for me, they've been woeful. You know, they may get, if the Champions League comes back, you know, we know La Liga suspended indefinitely, you know, until the RFEF and the Spanish government find a date to, you know, restart the league. But in a parallel universe, I would still see Madrid winning the league because Barcelona may have been very poor. They've not utilized their resources in terms of money well because, you know, they signed Dembele off one good year at Dortmund. Dembele, to me, is a great player. You know, maybe too soon. Coutinho, even Griezmann, I would say there's almost £500 million worth of talent there.
Suarez.
They've wasted. Suarez, you know, aging out. Messi's now, I would say, what, 33, going on 34, maybe. I mean, you look at that and you, in a way, you're thinking, right, Barcelona have La Masia. La Masia was one of the best academies in the world. You know, their production's dried up. For me, post Messi, I see a sort of post Cruyff as a player era for Barcelona. So, you know, that barren spell, unless, because, you know, Barcelona have the highest wage bill in the world. I think their wage bill is close to £1 billion. You know, Messi's on €1 million a week himself. And that's after tax, may I add. So with their crippling finances and, you know, lack of good recruitment and, you know, Spanish clubs for me have always been politically and behind the scenes unstable, because I think that Josep Maria Bartomeu wants to win the election, next upcoming election. So he hired a company to, you know, defame the characters of his rivals and also key figures in Barcelona, such as Pique, Busquets, Messi, which I found quite bizarre. You know, the whole Messi versus Abidal row, that was quite bizarre as well. You know, obviously, we talked about Real Madrid. You know, Florentino Perez is a volatile character, but I don't think Florentino Perez would have gone to the extent that Bartomeu has done just to spare himself, essentially. Because under Bartomeu, I don't see Barcelona winning anything anytime soon, because I'm talking like going back to Pep levels.
It's a really strange league in La Liga, isn't it? And I agree with you completely. I think that an Atletico Madrid has had probably the missed opportunity for me. I think this was the one. I think this was the league. This was the season where they could have won La Liga again. And if you look at Madrid with the inconsistencies they've had, they had a very, very slow start to the season. Somehow have got themselves, I think, back into top position.
I think they're currently top at this point of time.
Okay, but they're very close, aren't they?
Yeah,
they're very close.
Maybe a point or two.
Yeah, and this is a Madrid side that I think has lost more games than they've lost in many, many a season before that.
Yep.
I mean, they've lost, their home form has been atrocious. It's been a struggle for Zidane to get them back into a comfortable style of playing. I think he's played a blinder, by the way, Zidane. I think he's viewed as being a very good manager. I think he is a very good manager. I also think he's a very clever manager. If you look at when he left the first time, just before Ronaldo had left, yep, as well. Ronaldo went away. He sat back for over a year. He's watched Madrid struggle actually to get some consistency. He's come back in and he's sort of, as you said earlier, he's got that new sort of youthful aspect back involved and he's been given a bit more time. So I think he's, yep, done a masterclass in terms of keeping his own profile high. You look at Barcelona. They've changed managers more times in the past year than I think they've done in, again, several years prior to that. They don't seem to have a shape about them. The general plan seems to be a little bit like Sarri. It's like Sarri.
Messi and, yeah.
And pray for the best.
And also...
Like Sarri at Juventus.
Sorry to interrupt you, but, you know, that's been in the past 5 or 6 years. Tata Martino, Luis Enrique, Ernesto Valverde, and now Quique Setién. I would say that in terms of style to watch, Setién is probably, if he gets a full preseason, that is, I think he will have the most impact, because, you know, his best side had a really good style of play, you know, attractive style of play, which fits in with Barcelona. You know, I find how Barcelona sort of, you know, bought and then just, you know, shipped off Coutinho, Dembele, and, you know, eventually, I think this summer, Griezmann, you know, after a couple of seasons, it's a bit bizarre. So, you know, I think we've, you know, Barcelona, they'll always be remembered for, you know, Pep's time at the club and how Pep basically made Messi. But, you know, I think that, you know, I think their time at the top may be coming to an end once the little magician retires. I mean, moving on to Atletico Madrid,
All I was going to say, JK, was I think if you look at what they've lost over the past 5 or 6 years, Barcelona, in Frankie de Jong, they have a Iniesta or Xavi replacement. They've done that. I think where they've struggled is to get the other. And that's where the gap is. They've tried Vidal in there. Okay. That hasn't really worked. They've tried a couple of other players as well in the round. That I think they even tried Dembele before he got injured in a sort of central midfield role. Again, a player out of position.
You mean Coutinho. That didn't work. Coutinho. Sorry,
Coutinho's the other one they've tried there as well.
I think, sorry to interrupt you, that De Jong is meant to be the Xavi replacement, Coutinho is meant to be the Iniesta replacement.
Yes, yeah. Whichever way around, but they haven't been able to do both. And that's been an issue for them. So, but no, back to Atletico Madrid. Here is, and you mentioned this earlier, as one of the dinosaur teams in terms of their style. Would a more expansive approach this season potentially seen them over the line? You look at the signing of João Felix, for example. They've got
Thomas Lemar, you know, 16-17 Monaco, probably one of, you know, the shining lights. You know, he's going to miss. They're looking to cut their losses on him. And, you know, it's a bit similar to Barcelona as in terms of, you know, you come in and you're sort of, you know, there's already style. There is, you know, there's the big man, as you would call it, in, you know, Barcelona, it's Messi. And that's going to be Jude Simeone. So having that overriding presence and that sort of defined, very restrictive offensively style of play, I would say that's hindering Jean Felix, because, you know, Jean Felix, for me, yes, he's only played 50 games, but he showed a lot of promise, a lot of composure as a youngster at Benfica. And, you know, if he'd gone to Man City under Pep's tutelage, you know, there would be a different story. So, you know, right time, wrong club. I mean, personally, I would say he could have stayed at Benfica too. But Atletico Madrid as a side, I'm impressed with, you know, how they've come back to the loss of Godin, Juanfran, Felipe Luis, Luca Hernandez, all in one summer. One summer. You know, we expected them to struggle. But doing all of this in one summer, and, you know, there was always going to be a drop-off because they had the same back four for almost, you know, the last 5 years. And, you know, they made big money, sold Luca Hernandez for 80 million, obviously sold Griezmann for, you know, upwards of almost 100 million pounds. So, you know, we would always expect a downturn because, you know, it takes time to adapt and gel. And I've been impressed with a couple of signings, actually. I would say Renan Lodi from Atletico Paranaense has been very impressive. Felipe from Porto, even being 30 years old, I think he's been very impressive, you know, coming into that side, gives a little bit more steel alongside Stefan Savic. You know, I would never think that a Manchester City reject called Stefan Savic would start
up
like
this. I was always
thinking it would be Jose Maria Jimenez, but he's been saved at the season. You know, maybe a Van Dijk partner at Liverpool, but going into midfield, they signed Hector Herrera, and, you know, they haven't been able to create as much. So, you know, I expect them to be where they are. Just another quick overview of the rest. So, Real Sociedad, Martin Odegaard, Mikel Oyarzabal, and Alexander Isaac, you know, really firing them into the top four places. For me, doing really well. Getafe, almost playing that Burnley-esque football, you know, drawn against Inter.
Great season, yeah.
You know, playing with the front two with a combined age of 65, you know, doing really well for me. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if they finished Champions League. So, you know, La Liga has been a weird league this season. And, we'll catch you next week for the Bundesliga, Serie A, and maybe Liga. This is the RFR.
JK, just one more thing before you wrap up. Obviously, over the next couple of weeks, we will be looking for guests to be on the show. What JK and I have discussed is that this is an open invitation to the whole of Wellington, both staff and students. What we'd like you to do is, if you are interested on being on the show at some point over the next term, if you could email JK, please, and copy me into that email just with a quick reply to state that you're interested is enough. And then what we will do is put together some sort of order and have between one or two guests on the show each week. And there is no prerequisite here, guys. Everybody is welcome. I mean, hopefully you'll have some interest in football, but apart from that, that's all we're looking for. Everybody is very welcome to join us. JK, thank you very much for having me.
Thank you very much, Mr. J. And we'll catch you guys next week. You know, we may have a double upload during the week. You never know, slight little teaser. So, yeah, that's been it from me, JK Ranchanana. I've been speaking to Mr. Paul Jennings here. That's the IFR for this week. Have a great week, guys. You know, enjoy your e-lessons and catch you guys soon. Peace.